Blue Hen Sports Cage on 91.3 WVUD with Teddy Gelman.
I feel like I need to stand up in studio here and kind of experiment with how that would work.
Brandon Halveck.
Their whole defensive line has been arrested once or twice over the past 2 years.
Ahmed Quadri.
Yankees are fun to watch, end quote. That's it. That's all I ever said.
And Jake Lampert.
Eat more chicken. There you go. I'll throw a slogan in there. If anyone here is working for Chick-fil-A and wants to throw me some sandwiches.
It's Sports Talk Radio on 91.3 WVUD. Welcome to the cage.
We have to start with the news out of the University of Delaware. They had the festival on the green today, the Delaware First Festival, and we now have an idea what the stadium and athletic renovations will look like. As I mentioned moments ago in my update, they are expected to be announced at halftime of Saturday's game against Albany, but the renderings, which are the designs, are already uploaded online, so we have an idea, an updated stadium, a state-of-the-art facility, they're calling it, that'll be right in front of the stadium to prep the student-athletes for post-college. So, Brandon, Ahmed, happy to be back in the cage this week, and a good story to start with today to get to a story that we've been talking about for a very long time now, feeding in with the growth of the athletic department, and now we finally have an idea what it's going to look like.
Well, yeah, I think first and foremost, I don't think this team has great FBS aspirations right now. They just want to dominate the FCS and kind of move up and recruit the players here, get some of those 3.5, 4, 4.5 star recruits in with some of these facilities you talked about. And you want to talk about the football stadium in general. I love the drawings of the press box and the media for the media being part of the radio station and all that. I'm a little mad I didn't get that before. Now I'm getting a little old and on my way out, so I won't get a chance to enjoy those fancy buildings. But again, I think it's good. I think it's great. I think UD is definitely on the come up. You saw Chrissy Raywalk and what she did, our athletic director, what she did for this university, some of the moves she made, some of the people she brought in. So I think she's doing the right thing by doing this. You didn't really get into the figures too much. I think it was $60 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you may have gotten into
No, I didn't. So thank you for bringing that up.
$60 million specifically just to the football stadium alone, if I'm
I think it's for both. Football stadium and the
for
athletic
both.
Center.
And the athletic center,
so
okay.
So the athletics
right.
projects.
And then, again, somewhere in the $750 million range for just everything in general, what the school is doing. But this is definitely a part of it. And again, whether you like it or not, I know some people that are non-athletes, you know, will always have a problem with this. And it's an interesting debate, or I guess something just to talk about with the sports. But again, football and basketball, what they mean to a school, and I guess what they could mean to the university moving forward. I don't think it's a bad deal, and I think it's a good move moving forward.
I already see some of it on my timeline, Instagram, Twitter, people talking about, well, why are they putting this money into a program that can't even fill the stadium as it's presently constructed? So there is that side to it, although these renovations are more so oriented to modernizing the stadium as opposed to expanding it. But you know, that question still remains, which I think is a valid point. But at the same time, it has been a very long time coming. It's been since 1975 that Delaware Stadium has seen any major changes. It's pretty crazy when you go back and watch some of the film, like in the CAA feature a few weeks ago, where they're showing film of Omar Cuff and Joe Flacco, and even further back than that, Delaware Stadium looks identical to how it does now in those pictures, even though the players and the pads all look like they're 20, 30 years ago, because they are. So in my opinion, it's been a long time coming. This is a step in the right direction for Delaware. It is a lot of money to pour into a stadium and athletic center, but to me, it also is just a small fraction of what Delaware wants to do on a larger scale, that $750 million talked about to this Delaware First campaign as a whole, to which the athletics portion is just one prong of like seven or eight different objectives. So it is a lot of money, but in the larger perspective, it's only a fraction of what Delaware really wants to do. As far as we're concerned here, talking sports more specifically, I think it's a step in the right direction.
So you talk about the seven things. You have the athletic aspect of it. And then we have the Biden Initiative, Graduate College, Innovation and Entrepreneurship, engagement, colleges, and student and faculty support. And all of this is available at delawarefirst.udel.edu. /priorities.
/the cage.
that's how you find us. This podcast will be available later on tonight into tomorrow. But this is where they got all the specifics about what this is, and you got it exactly. 750 is the total. Athletics is only a small fraction. So just to reiterate for anybody who's just joining us who wasn't with us a few minutes ago, there are a few parts to the athletic renovation. The athletic center is what they are calling a one-stop shop, a state-of-the-art facility that they are going to be, according to the renderings, they will be building this just in front of the main gates to the stadium. And in this center will be a student success center, health and well-being, a lot of emphasis on health and well-being, obviously, strength and conditioning, and then prepping for post-college. And then we have the stadium renovation. So we're only at phase one. Once they get construction going for phase one, they will announce the follow-up phases. So we wonder, maybe in the follow-up phases, are they talking about seat expansion? Possibly. But for now, what it is, as far as the fan experience, I don't see too much added.
There's the section, the three sections in the middle of the home side are going to get chair backs. So they're not going to be specific bleachers. But outside of that, you know, typical fan doesn't really worry about the press box, and that's the biggest change that's coming to the stadium.
It is a good, in terms of the aesthetic, looking at a nice press box will be big when you compare it with other stadiums, specifically JMU in the CAA.
And we should also mention that as part of the athletic center and that press box, which will kind of work together to be at the top of the stadium, there will also be a new club, which will be for those high donors, those high-rolling season ticket owners, so those people will be affected by it. It looks to me, based off the renderings, like a souped-up version of the Bob Carpenter Club, which is now attached to the basketball arena and overlooks the stadium from that end zone. Instead, it looks like it will be more so on the home side with perhaps better sight lines and overall more to do inside.
Well, you mentioned JMU, Teddy, and we're not really way too off on that. I know JMU also did renovations close to the same dollar amount not too long ago. But again, they also seat roughly 24,000, and Delaware seats around the same.
I believe 22.
Again, they have a consistent streak of, I think, 16,000. So they're not filling that up. I think the last time they filled that up, it was like a Temple game or something years ago. But
like the '70s or something.
It was like 1972 or something against Temple. But again, similar numbers to JMU, and JMU is, you know, supposedly the best in the CAA or the best in FCS. So again, we're not too off. So I kind of like Brandon's point on it's not like a whole makeover. It's just a little facelift. You know, they're not starting from scratch or anything. They're just adding small details. And then they're also doing their part on recruiting the people that are, or the kids that still may be in high school that are interested in coming. And that little facility is kind of a deal breaker where they can come in and they can study. They have their own thing that they know that is just for athletes only, and that might help them in the future. So they're doing a little bit of everything. And I think that with the dollar amount, I'm always going to be a little stingy. That's probably just the way I came up. But I think that they're doing the best they can, and I don't mind the move at all.
And we were sort of talking about the athletic center before the show as that recruiting tool. So whereas, it's a lot of money, it's kind of what a lot of these schools probably feel they have to do to keep pace. Once a school that's similar to Delaware size gets something like that performance center and the updated press box and so forth, but especially that performance center where there's the gym, there's all the services for the athletes, you feel like you have to match that if you're Delaware in order to be competitive in the recruiting field. Obviously, more goes into it, coaches, location, education, so forth. But if you said that's not a big ploy, you'd be lying. It is a pretty big deal to have those facilities. And you see schools on the larger stage have, you know, talk about the Texas locker rooms earlier this year. Big and big and big to keep wowing these high school seniors to come to your school, and Delaware getting a little bit more competitive in that aspect too with this.
Well, I do find it hard to believe that this will be it. There's going to be more. Because
at least they're probably hoping there's more, because you have to keep getting the funding.
If they get the money.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you saw, but they have a thing. So on this website, if you go to the progress tab on this Delaware First website, I'm not sure how accurate this is, but if you go down to the campaign progress, They are 3/4 of the way through this. Again, I don't know what these numbers are, how far through, but this campaign was officially launched, I guess, today. Maybe, I don't know.
I would guess with the festival, at least to the public.
To the public, yeah. And then a lot of people, as far as students go, just kind of hearing the student feel today was, what the heck is this? Students were at the Green. They're like, oh, I'm here to get free stuff. I don't know what this is. It's a campaign to get money, not only for athletics, but also for the grad school, all this other stuff that President Asonis is looking to do. And he has poured a lot of not only money, but also investment into the athletic department. Him and Raywalk work very closely. Something Chrissy Raywalk said today at the festival was the idea of student engagement, her working with Jose Luis Riera. So there's a lot of different things going on here, and this is just one aspect of it. And you think if they get to this amount, the one thing I was trying to find out earlier was if there's a specific deadline that they get this.
Yeah, there's no timetable
probably
out there.
Probably a year. That's typically what they do for these kinds of things. And then once you get it, you can progress into phase two, etc. But it's almost like Delaware Stadium is that last aspect. We've seen the Bob Carpenter Center, the Carpenter Sports Building, the Field House, all have changes, renovations, upgrades, creations, destroys, whatever, in the last
for
several
years.
For better
changes.
Or for worse. And so now Delaware Stadium is getting up to it. So I think for the program in general, forget the money amount. This is not only good, it's also somewhat necessary.
Mm-hmm. Overdue. I would use that word.
Overdue. Especially when you combine it with frustration that has mounted with the lack of on-field performance. If you got this great stadium and you lose, well, at least you got one of the two, but the stadium has not been updated. The team has not been good. Jokingly, people probably will feel bad about the upgrade of the bathrooms.
I was about to bring that up. How do you guys feel about the pee wall going away? Is it tradition or is it disgusting?
I think it's disgusting. I want to hear from you, Amid. What do you think about that?
I usually go for the 90-degree angle. I go for the corner, so I'm blocked
TMI,
off.
TMI.
It's you can just corner yourself off. You get stage fright. You just can't go
stage
in there.
Fright.
It gets a little scary. So I go for the corner where I feel like I'm blocked off and no one can see me. So that's my thought process on it.
I mean, that was a very known aspect
right.
of this stadium.
I'm interested to see how many people are upset about
so,
that.
So a waste of water. An infinite waste of water.
So we'll see what they do on Saturday, what they say specifically. We were talking earlier today, don't expect the specifics, although the specifics are already out, although I don't believe that many people have found them.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we'll
have.
Get them to you.
Yeah, you keep an eye out for maybe a story later on this evening.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast.
Here's Nigel Hill, a freshman cornerback for the Blue Hens who has, I don't know if I should say burst onto the scene, getting more playing time as a result of injuries, but Brandon was with him down Monday for interviews, and I heard they were some real good interviews. Here's just a snippet, Nigel Hill, on the team's mentality heading into this Saturday's game against Albany.
Like our coach says, respect all but fear none. So that's how we're coming in to this game. That's how we're coming into every game. We respect Albany. They're a good team, like how last year they had playoff hopes, and we ruined that last year. But this year, it's kind of a switch. So right now, we're just coming in. We're respecting Albany because we know what they can do. They played very tough games throughout the whole year. But like we said, we're trying to win out. And we believe in our team. We believe in everything that we can do.
Respect all but fear none. I like it. This young man's got some nice comments. Brandon, you wrote a good story about him in the review this week, and going off of what he's brought on the field to his mentality off the field and his attitude, and it's something that Rocco has instilled in the team, this idea of, you know, regardless who we're going to play, everybody in the CAA is going to be tough. We've seen it. They lost to Towson. They beat Maine. Albany, Villanova. Delaware's going to be favored, but you can't take these teams lightly because you know they're going to play you tough.
Mm-hmm. And last year was kind of a reverse of what it's going to be this year. Albany had playoff hopes, second to last game of the season. Delaware came in with not a whole lot to play for, and they came away with a 33-17 upset win on the road, and a big game from the defense forced Albany into mistakes and took advantage of them. Albany is coming into Newark looking to do the same thing against Delaware this season. They're 3-6 and 1-5 in the conference, but I think many people would argue that they're better than their record would indicate. They've lost this season, 4 games by 7 points or less. 2 of those losses coming to Richmond and Elon, who Elon is ranked in the top 10. They're ranked 7th in the country. They've only lost once so far this year. They lost to them by 6-0. And a Richmond team that's receiving votes in the top 25 after beating Villanova. So easily a team that could be a 4 or 5 win team with a chance at the playoffs. Instead, they don't have a lot to play for, but they're playing spoiler just as Delaware did to them a year ago.
Yeah, and it's going to be a game in which we expect Jamie Jarman will play. We hope he's going to play. He's the wide receiver who leads the team in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, all of that stuff. He did not play on Saturday against Maine due to a bruised lung in which he wasn't cleared. He was pretty close. Rocco said he was right on the fringe, but he wasn't cleared to play. So if he, after what we saw Joe Walker do as that running threat, receiving threat, through a nice pass across the board, if you can combine both of those guys, you may be able to put together a somewhat dynamic offense, which sounds kind of funny now because at the start of this year we said dynamic offense. Well, that's not what this team has, but they do have some dynamic players. And if they can put it together against an Albany team that you know is going to play tough, you think that's going to kind of bring some energy to this crowd who hasn't seen much offensive production at home this year.
No, I mean, there wasn't much besides first thing that came was the Richmond game, which was crazy in and of itself.
I did forget about the Richmond
game. I'm not going to peg that on pure offense. It came into an overtime stand where it was score or go home. So it came to that point because there was a lack of offense and it was a blocked kick. So, But overall, if they can get that Joe Walker, Caruso working, and if they can solidify what they want, because a lot of the plays that they're doing with Walker and Caruso are read plays, where Joe Walker, if he gets the ball in the pocket, he gets to read it himself, whatever he wants to do. He either follows a running back, leads the running back, or throws a quick pass into the slot and letting a receiver run. If they can solidify that and figure out what they want to do and try to move away, not that read plays are negative, but if they can kind of get those set plays, it would be much more dynamic and much more, I guess, fun to watch for a Delaware team, like you said, that hasn't seen that much explosive offense.
And defensively, we know they're going to be good. Does anybody have off the top of your head right here the defensive ranking of Albany?
Albany is 3rd in the CAA in total defense and 4th in scoring.
Scoring defense.
4th in scoring defense.
It's another good defense. Maine was number 2 in the CAA in passing defense. And most of the Blue Hens' yards in that game came on the ground. You get your Walker, Kane, etc. These defenses are tough, and you hope you could put together a game plan that's going to find a way to penetrate them and get through. Now, the Albany offense, I believe, is one of the worst in the CAA.
Yeah, they've been struggling to run the football. I know they had, he's got 2 last names. I can't pronounce his first one, but his second last name's Hanks. He was like an all-CAA guy last year. He struggled a little bit.
I'll try to
Will Brunson is their quarterback, started the year off strong, but he struggled in the last couple of weeks as well for the Great Danes. One other thing we should note, too, is
Elijah Ibutunkun.
Yeah, see, that's why I ran into the problem. one other thing we should note about Delaware that I pointed out earlier today on Twitter, Thomas Jefferson said, according to Delaware's game notes, which are provided by the team before every game for the media, Thomas Jefferson will not return to the Blue Hens next season. It's a choice that he's decided to make. They also listed Christian Portale as not returning, though he refuted that, so we'll have to get some clarification there. But not super significant anyway. He's never played for Delaware. The big thing is Thomas Jefferson, who entered this year as the starting running back after Wes Hills was academically ineligible, will not return. And I would imagine he's probably not going to get a carry the rest of the season. He hasn't played, I think, for 3 games, and I would be surprised, based off that news, if he ever plays again.
And it doesn't feel like a big loss because he hasn't done anything. Although I was very high on Thomas Jefferson back in September. I mean,
there's a reason why this guy was CAA Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I mean, I'm just
he's got some pop.
I'm thinking back 2 years ago when Wes Hills was hurt in games. Mm-hmm. It feels like an eternity ago because now Hills is academically ineligible and he's gone. But Thomas Jefferson would come into the game when Hills was hurt, and he would rumble down the field. He was fast, he was strong, he was physical, and he brought a spark to a Delaware offense that had, as it did for a lot of this season, with the exception of some parts here and there, no throwing game because Walker was the quarterback. And Jefferson brought this spark, and the downfall here, the guy, to me, could have contributed I was a little bit questionable about Kanai Kane at first, but now I have belief in Kanai Kane based on what he's done. But you just think, what could have been?
Right. Even though Kane has been great, what could have been if you have also the smash and dash, if you have the quick guy and Thomas Jefferson to go with him? I'll always remember the game against North Carolina where he went crazy, was featured on SportsCenter, and then he follows it up. I think it was against William & Mary. He had two games that were close to 150 rushing yards and over 150 yards from scrimmage back-to-back weeks. Ran for 890 yards as a redshirt freshman, and I think just 8 or 9 starts that season, splitting time with Kareem Williams. This guy had some pretty prolific days at Delaware that seemed to be coming to an end for reasons that are still pretty unclear. They said that he's dealing with an injury, but at this point in the season, he's been resting it. We haven't gotten many updates. It's a curious situation, but expected to be Kanai Kane and sprinkles of Kareem Williams for the rest of the way.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast.
How about the Lady Field Hockey team, although we don't have a men's team, so and I don't think Lady Blue Hens is a proper term.
No.
Okay.
You're not supposed to use
I never use it. Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks for confirming. So congratulations to the field hockey team. 5 consecutive CAA championships, and they are headed north to Connecticut to take on the Penn State Nittany Lions in the first round. The Blue Hens did beat the Nittany Lions 2-0 back on September 17th. And they pretty much breezed their way through the CAA tournament. Not much competition. On Friday, though, I say it was close for a while against Northeastern. Mm-hmm. Sunday against William & Mary, though, 3-0, it was all hens.
Yeah, it was a good game to watch. You said it breezed. I was talking to Brandon, and Brandon literally told me before the game started, I hope they don't blow them out because I want to watch a good game. And that's essentially what happened in the second quarter, the second half. It was a tale of two halves. First half was really defensive matchup, and it was really fun to watch. And then Taylor Lister opens up the second half roughly 3.5 seconds in with a goal, just at the right place in the right time. So, and you got to just look big picture here. Coach Vander Kerkhoff said in the selection show, if they do win Friday, they play, if they do win Saturday, they'll play a team Sunday and both of these teams they've played, it'll most likely be, I believe, Penn State and then UConn, right? So they've played both of those teams.
Correct.
So it's always good to have that fresh in your mind. And win or loss, you've played that team, so you're comfortable. There's a level of comfort going in. And then whatever happens in Kentucky, that happens. It's, again, 0-0 is the start of a new season, essentially. So if you're the Blue Hens, you got to feel very comfortable. I know us four specifically in here weren't too high. I think we were giving them 5s across the board on a scale of 1 to 10. So we're all really a coin flip here. But I don't know. I like the Blue Hens' chances going in now, and especially with the selection. In the same position they are last year, we all said it, just to state the obvious here. So, field hockey team in a very good position moving forward, I believe.
And it, like you just said, it's a very similar situation to their path last year. Last year they came into the tournament ranked 8th in the country. Now they're 7th. Last year in the first round, a tough first game against a ranked opponent, Louisville. This year, a tough first game against a ranked opponent, Penn State. Second game, should they advance past Penn State, will be the number one ranked UConn Huskies. Last year, they defeated the number one ranked Duke Blue Devils to move on to the semifinals and what we call the Final Four. So it's the same path, and it's a very similar team. The question is, can they do it again? And there's a reason why you play these teams in the regular season, so you can get a look at them and make adjustments when you go back and play them in the tournament. That's why you have tough out-of-conference play throughout the regular season. So we'll see if Delaware can make those adjustments, specifically if they get to UConn on Sunday, a team that beat them 1-0 in overtime. Very, very close game. Delaware will need to figure out a way to better convert those easy chances, particularly penalty corners. I feel like this team, I don't have the exact numbers, but I feel like they've been less efficient on penalty corners this year. I think they've only scored 17 or 18 goals off of corners. I'm not sure how many they scored last year, but they've had over 100 corners, so the conversion rate has not been great for this team. Against a team like UConn, the margin for error is more slim, so we'll see if they can make that adjustment if they get to UConn this weekend, if they can get past the Nittany Lions again.
Still out of 5 moving forward to possibly the Final Four?
Yeah. I know they're confident. I actually got to talk to Lauren Crudell earlier this week. She was a little bit worried about how cold it's going to be up there.
Yep.
It's going to be really cold here this weekend, and I imagine only colder in Connecticut. But they're kind of business as usual, at least from talking to her. They know it's probably going to be UConn on Sunday. not set in stone. They'll have to beat Boston to get there, but they know it's going to be a tough game, and they're a game for it, but they're by no means thinking we're already in Kentucky. I think that's still a couple of steps away.
Get this. UConn's field hockey team has beaten everybody by at least 2 goals, with the exception of Michigan on September 3rd, and then the Delaware game when they beat Delaware 1-0 in overtime on September 24th. So UConn has stomped everybody with the exception of these two teams. They're 19-0, and they're scoring 8 goals, 10 goals, 12 goals. Not saying the Hens haven't done that, but they're doing this every few games. So if you face off against UConn, I mean, you were cut out for them, but Delaware did play UConn closest out of any of the teams.
And Delaware the only team that took them at least full time, so that's something, you got a couple items to take away there.
Yeah, I think that was a 1-0 score, and UConn, that was their lowest scoring game. They beat some teams 2.
They lead the country in goals per game with just over 4.
And they took them 70 minutes.
Well, when you say they took them 70, I mean,
overtime. That was the only overtime game.
You have to go. Well, 70 minutes is, you mean 75 minutes or 70
plus? No, 70.
Plus.
70 minutes.
Delaware played them 0-0 for 70 minutes.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And then they had to go to overtime.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying. Mm-hmm. So they've beaten, I mean, they're allowing no goals in a lot of games.
Very impressive.
They're a very tough team. Uh-huh. So last year, okay, the second game they played was Duke, right?
Correct.
Now, Duke was not undefeated. They were good. They were not undefeated.
They were number one team in the country, but they were not undefeated. Albeit in a very tough conference. They're in the ACC, which is probably the best field hockey conference in the country when you think about Louisville, Virginia, North Carolina, but they were not undefeated. They were not quite this dominant.
So it's going to be a tough row, but I'll tell you.
And UConn's got the top scoring player in the country. Sorry to cut you off, but Charlotte Fightner, she's the one who scored the one goal against Delaware. She's maybe the only player who's better than Greta Nauck. Greta Nauck right now is number 2 in the nation in scoring. Charlotte Fightner is number 1. So in every one of those little categories, a slight step up for this team.
Well, I'll tell you, if you are the defending champion, don't you want to face off against the best teams? You don't want an easy walk in the park.
Yeah, at some point you got to beat UConn, right? If you're going to be the national champs.
Absolutely.
You would love it to be in the national championship game, but the seeding shook out that you're probably going to play them in the second round. So if you're the best team in the country, you'll beat UConn.
That's a great point, Brandon. I don't get the whole, like, I got the tough side of the bracket, I got the weak side of the bracket. It doesn't matter. You're going to have to play them. If you're good, beat them early on. And I get it. Sometimes a Cinderella story will take care of business for you. So, your spot's easier going into the Final Four, going to the championship game. But if you're big and bad, beat them early. And you got to beat them anyway. So let's do it now.
Well, we did this whole continuum game last week. Let's do it again with this weekend. The 1-10 confidence meter. I really like this. 0 meaning you have nothing. 10 meaning you have a lot. 1 on the confidence meter that they will get past Penn State.
7.
That's a big jump.
Yeah, I think they're going to win.
Jake, you're
in here every week.
Jake's here. I forgot.
That's why.
Jake, you still in here, buddy?
I got the short chair here, so Ahmed, I can barely see you over the screens. But basically, and I think what Ahmed said was the fact that. Or Ahmed, I'm paraphrasing what you kind of said and going off of that, like, you're here because you're a good team and you're going to play, like, you're going to play the good teams eventually. Mm-hmm. So hearing that all the UConn things and that Delaware has played UConn that close with the 1-0 game, from what I've heard and what I've read on either any of your articles on the review, I would still feel pretty confident going into this that they can beat a Penn State team. So I'll go 6. I'll say 6 so they can beat the Penn State.
Jake was at a 5 last week, so not
I was at a 5,
a little more confident, not too much.
I mean, what did you say? Brandon's at 7.
I'm going to jump to 8. And to get
you're saying they're going to win this game.
I think that's what
8 means to me.
I'll put it this way. 8 means
so. What does 7 mean? They might.
7 means like they're probably going to win.
8 means 8 means they'll get to Kentucky. 8 means they'll get to Kentucky. Maybe.
But Kentucky? We're just talking about Penn State right
but,
now.
But you know,
we're not talking about UConn.
8 means they have a good chance of not only winning. Oh, you're talking about just this specific game only?
Mm-hmm,
I thought you were talking about chances moving forward.
Just this game.
Well, then I'll go 8 or 9. I think that they have this game.
Oh, it goes up.
I think that they have this game pretty much handled. I think that they're moving forward greatly, and I've been watching this team. I haven't been watching every game, but the games I have been watching, they have been improving. And then if you want to talk about just this weekend in general, I also feel very confident about this weekend in general.
All right, we've got to go to break. Yes or no, they go to the Final Four?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
I won't put it past that, but I'll go yes, that's it.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I can't do it either. I think UConn's too good. I'm going to say no. I hope they can. The game on Saturday, what is that, 2 o'clock, I believe. Saturday's game is at 2 o'clock. Sunday's game, I think, would be at 1. It's up in Storrs, Connecticut, at the University of UConn. Unfortunately, we will not be up there, but we'll have updates for you on Twitter.
Oh, she put her beard down. Here she comes.
So a couple weeks ago, we had a debate over Kidz Bop, and that stemmed from the Now CDs, Now 19, Now 20, Now 21. And I said over the break, does nobody know this song? This is by Trace Adkins from Now 21, Honky Tonk Badonkadonk. And the reason I play it is because it's fresh in my mind, because I selected this.
Not on my playlist.
I selected this as my walk-in song for my sister's bat mitzvah next week.
It's a great song. I think But did you look through the Kidz Bop CDs?
Shout out to Teddy's sister.
But are you sure you found nothing on the Kidz Bop CDs worthy of being a walk-in song?
This is better.
Everyone's entitled to their opinions.
I mean, I don't know.
Where is this bar mitzvah? Or is it bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah?
Bar is for a boy.
Everyone's coming.
Bat is for
everyone's
a girl.
So okay. Yeah, so this bat mitzvah, where is this at? You said walking song. You said Quicken Loans. Like, where are you doing this?
It's in Rockville, Maryland.
Okay, so like close to Northern Virginia. I know they make a lot of money at bat mitzvahs.
Who makes? The person who celebrates.
Yeah, I don't want to again use improper terms, but yeah, the mitzvah-y, I guess.
Walking on a wire here, man.
Yeah, I don't want to offend anyone, but a lot of money to be made. Yeah, I've seen a couple on TV. It's quite the spectacle.
You've seen them on TV?
Have you ever been to one?
I have been to one. It was more of a low-end one, but even that, my dude was on a chair, and he was crowd surfing on a chair. So Jewish family was great. I don't know how these things go. That's why I'm excited to know.
Single bar or bat mitzvah.
Shout out to Jake Shelton. He was crowd surfing on a chair on his bar mitzvah. He was like 12 years old.
Well, my mom texted me last week. She said, "Do you want to go up in the chair again?" I said, "Of course, I want to go up in the chair."
That's actually a thing.
Like,
oh my god!
Everybody does. It like, gets.
Oh my
that's
goodness!
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Well, again, shout out to Teddy's sister. She's listening.
So, yeah, I'm doing a Torah portion, a short one. I have to learn it. I practiced this morning, but it's pretty short.
He's
so.
Like, I've never.
But now we'll go with some NBA. The big news out of the NBA this week was Eric Bledsoe. Can I call him disgruntled?
Sure.
Okay, disgruntled.
I don't want to be here.
I mean,
right
he basically
now.
Asked out on Twitter or Instagram, right?
He was at a salon.
He was at a salon.
Don't assume anything.
Who, like, guy wants to be at a salon?
I
would tweet
chilling,
that too.
Chilling, getting his fade done. He's like, I just don't want to be here anymore. And then I guess it's like, I don't want to be in the sun, so I wouldn't want to be either. But like, actually, I would. I get paid. I'll do it.
So, okay, well, so he's very disgruntled then.
Right.
And he got traded to the Milwaukee Bucks to team up with Giannis, and I still don't know how to say his last name.
Did you say Greek Freak?
Okay, Greek Freak. So that's the big news. I guess we'll go first. Thoughts on that trade?
I really like it for the Bucks. They need to go all in this year. The Cavaliers are clearly not what we expected them to be. We'll see if they are what we think they can be in the playoffs. But right now in the regular season, that team is stumbling. The Celtics are playing well, but they don't have Gordon Hayward. The Wizards and the Raptors, they don't have a player at the level of Giannis. So if you get some pieces around him to help, I think they have a shot. I don't think it's a great one, but you have to take that shot. Eric Bledsoe, I think, will be a nice 1-2 combo guard to pair with Malcolm Brogdon and give him a little extra scoring to lighten the load on Giannis, because he is providing, I think this is accurate, I'm not 100% sure, it's either him or Kristaps Porzingis, is providing the highest percentage of his team's buckets this season. And he's scoring at will. He actually is the guy who's getting to the rim the most, and he has the highest shooting percentage at the rim, so he's getting there and you can't stop him. But they're going to need somebody for the 82-game stretch that can lighten the load off of him. And I think Eric Bledsoe could be that guy. He's probably the best guy who was available in the trade market.
It is very clear what the Bucks are trying to do. And if you think for a second they don't think that they can compete against whether it's the Cavs or the Celtics in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals, then you're crazy. You're out of your mind. You don't understand basketball. This team has the opportunity to do that. Will they do that? I personally don't think so, but this is a team that's trying to equip themselves to make it there to that run, hopefully, and maybe in the next 2 to 3 years, you never know, into the NBA Finals. So again, they're far ways away from that, but I think the Bledsoe pickup is real, and I think the Bucks are also real. They're going to finish top four in the East. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But again, this team is making a run and making a run quick. They're maybe a piece away from really challenging that another Eastern Conference Finalist team from making that next step.
Blue Hen Sports Cage on 91.3 WVUD.
We're going to transition now into Delaware women's basketball. They will begin their schedule this week. In fact, tomorrow against Buffalo. That's a 1 o'clock game. And then they open up their home schedule next Thursday. Actually, wow, a week from today. Amit, am I calling that with you?
Yes, you are.
Okay, so
American University is in the building.
So that's next Thursday at 7 o'clock. We're calling that. Of course, the men's team begins next Friday. Brandon and Hannah are calling that game. So the women's team up and running. And Brandon, you had the opportunity to sit down with, was it just Adair and Abby Gonzalez?
From women's.
Okay, well, let's do this. We have some sound, particularly from those two players, or only from those players is what I should say.
Coach and player.
So we'll start with Natasha Adair. I thought this was cool. She was asked about the style of play, how they're going to play, and here's what she had to say.
How would you describe your playing style?
Fast. I want us to take pride on both sides of the ball. You know, I want to be a team that people will watch and say, wow, this is well executed. But I also want people to say they're relentless on defense. I want to wear down our opponents on both sides of the ball, but I want it to make sense. If there's a transition break, take it. If there's not, let's organize and let's execute. So just teaching the game more than dictating the game and just having our players respond to it will be great.
Teaching the game more than dictating the game. She's talked about that a lot. A teacher of the game, a student of the game, seems to be one of her themes.
Blank whatever of the game and playing with purpose and drive and motivation and basketball IQ. That's encouraging to hear her talk about playing fast. I think this is a team that's been stuck in the muck as far as playing slow, dumping the ball into the post, where you have a good player, Nicole Anaposti, but every time you drop it into the post and have her back down, everybody else stands around and is still. It's completely stops the ball. The most effective offenses at the collegiate level right now and in the NBA with the widespread use of the three-point shot are teams that can move without the ball and teams that move the ball efficiently and fast. And they're up and down the floor. They're getting off shot attempts. We're seeing in the NBA right now the pace is through the roof through the first 2 weeks of the season. I think Delaware has a few players that will play better, for lack of a better adjective, in that faster pace where they can get more shots up, maybe get more open looks, and have more movement of players off the ball and the ball itself. You might give up a few points from Nicole Anaposti on backdowns, but I think you'll make up for it even more so with three-point shots, long balls from players like a Bailey Cargo.
It's actually a perfect transition into the next soundbite from Adair talking about these players and maybe some of the different roles that they'll play in this year.
We have so many players in different roles now. Returning, obviously, Nicole Anaposti, we have Makeda Nichols and Abby Gonzalez, but for the most part, other than that, everyone's kind of still new, and the whole team, they're like freshmen because the system is new, the style of play is new. So right now, it's getting the jitters out. It's building that chemistry.
Did she talk at all about the style of play beyond it's going to be fast? Because she references it a lot here.
Well, she talked a lot about what they want to do on the defensive end. They want to be relentless. That's a word of hers. They want to tire out the opponents. They want to be a team that you don't want to play against, a team that wears you down defensively. What goes into that? Conditioning, team communication. We'll see if those things improve this year. But she didn't talk as much about the offense. It was more so defensively. We want to build that identity of being a relentless team. And then offensively, we're going to push the ball off the rebound.
It is a little bit, not annoying, but sometimes when they're talking about this stuff, it's very, oh, here's our identity. This is what we're going to do. It's not very tangible. Like, you would love to look to her and say, who's going to start this? And,
right.
But you have to start
at that foundation.
Sure,
you have
sure.
to say, okay, how do we want to play basketball? Okay, you can play this role effectively. You can play that role effectively. Now let's have all of these players in their own roles work cohesively together. And that's going to take time. It's going to take practice. It's going to take game experience. But you have to assess the personnel and build that identity out first before you can talk about, okay, who's going to be in the starting five? Who's going to average 10 points a game? Who's going to average 15? Once those roles kind of figure themselves out, we'll see that about midway through the season. Okay, who are the biggest contributors on this team?
And Teddy, it was like kind of when we did our first show, the live patio show, we had Adair on, and she, paraphrasing it, she basically said, like, we talked about Rebecca Lawrence and everything. She's like, nobody's safe. Like, anyone can play any position. She's going to move everybody around and kind of figure it out. So I think in the maybe the best way possible, she's still figuring out what she wants to do with the offense. That's why the best tag she can put it on is fast, and then they're going to move from there. Because we saw a pretty cookie-cutter offense that we saw last year that we can basically tell you exactly what's going to happen for the majority of the game. This year, with this new fast look and with this new no-one-safe look, we might see something totally different from that.
You know, I talk about Bailey Cargo has really come on strong kind of in this offseason and preseason, if you will. But pretty much every player, I like to give a player their role or their gift. And so as a coach, you like to implement that in just the scheme.
I love how she starts talking about Bailey Cargo there, and then she transitions into every player has a role, has a gift, which is very valid. But I guess we can brush on it real quick for a couple minutes here. What do we think we're going to see from her? Because this was a
Cargo.
Play... Cargo. Because Bailey Cargo was somebody who had immense production and efficiency high school-wise shooting the three. And Adair brings in a repertoire, although that's really the wrong word to use. But at Georgetown, her team's shot a lot of threes. Do we think that that's going to bode well, or is that a connection that may not be apparent?
I think that the talent of shooting the three ball, I don't think that's gone from Bailey Cargo, despite shooting 25% from three last year, 12 of 48. I think it comes to getting more comfortable at the collegiate level. I think there's a difference between being able to just shoot the ball at practice, in the gym, by yourself, and being able to be in the flow of the game and stop, collect yourself, and shoot the ball when you have to go play defense, when you're playing at a level where the speed is much faster than you're used to and you're no longer the most athletic, the most gifted person on the floor. I think as she progresses in her career, she'll get more comfortable. That being said, I don't know if she's ever going to shoot 40% from three. We'll need to see more before all of a sudden it's this weapon. But I do expect some improvement from that 25% mark from three and from the mark of 28% from the field goal, from the floor, excuse me. Because she averaged 13.6 minutes a game last year, they're going to need her to play more. And as she gets more and more experienced, I expect that the speed of the game will slow down a little bit and that shot will start to fall a little bit more as she gets more comfortable.
Brandon, did you get a chance to ask them about their CAA rankings? They're listed, I think, favorably at number five, and how that might affect them moving forward. Or if they didn't answer, maybe you can answer, Brandon, how you feel about that.
I didn't ask about that. I think it's fair.
Well, they're going to... I think that the... Who votes for this? The voters? We always hear the voters. Who are the voters? It's the same thing as football?
It's probably just like some panel.
Some voters.
We did an audit on the football poll of voters because...
Those voters,
some questionable
those
calls.
Voters stink.
Richmond, yeah. Stony Brook, you know what?
Mike was telling me that for Delaware, one of the votes is some guy who used to work at WDSD and no longer does. So, like, he's some guy who's completely out of touch with Delaware football, and he still gets a vote in this poll. So I imagine Delaware seems to be pretty organized. I imagine at some of these smaller schools that get votes in smaller conferences, there are even more people out of touch, which causes a team like Delaware, I think, to not be justly ranked, and a team like Youngstown State to stay in the rankings for about 7 weeks too long at 3-5 earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Now we come back to the women's team here. It was a good tangent. So we talked about Bailey Cargo, the other player that we thought last year, Cargo and Abby Gonzalez were going to be these two dynamic point guards because when Tina, or point guard and shooting guard, when Tina Martin came in here, she hyped it all up. Well, now it didn't happen. And also, Tina Martin is gone after, quote, retiring. And now she's.
Do you think
the,
she gets a tribute, like, on the video board this year? You
know, oh, we're going to have fun talking about
that. That's going to be interesting.
When she comes, and when she goes
did
back,
she get the Paul Pierce standing ovation,
she comes,
like,
it's
in TD Bank? Or?
January 19th.
Do you
comes
get that?
Back.
January 19th.
Do you, like, get up off your bleacher and, like, give Tina Martin
instead
a hand?
Like, the thank you, wait, Tony,
you know,
banners.
Like,
no, wait, thank you,
Sandra Day in the background, like, all right.
You're not going to be here. It's in North Carolina.
They have to play them at home.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Sunday the 28th of January.
Okay.
1 o'clock.
Mark your calendars.
Mark your calendars.
It's game time. On
Mark
and off the court.
Mark your calendars and
Tina
get a
Martin
box
returns
of tissues.
To the Bob Carpenter Center.
Wow. If that doesn't sell tickets, I don't know what will. Notre Dame. But yeah, you know what I mean.
So we'll go to, here's Abby Gonzalez talking about Erica Brown, who graduated. She was the point guard who pretty much led the way for the Blue Hens for the last couple seasons. Here's what Abby Gonzalez had to say about her.
I'm very thankful for E teaching me her ways, and I just kind of have to keep in mind that, you know, I'm the floor general now. I'm the one in charge. I'm the point guard. I'm the one people look to handle the ball.
Yeah.
I had to say at first, who is E? Because I didn't know if she was referring to Nicole Enobosi. We thought it was Enobosi, but Adair is saying Enobosi. So maybe it's Enobosi now. Nicole,
she's a junior. Hopefully we would have sorted that out by
now. I feel ridiculous if we don't know what it is. Nicole Enobosi. All right. So Gonzalez, that's an intriguing person only because she's the facilitator of the offense, you would think. Now, Nicole Enobosi is the player in the... I can't say that without smiling.
Shade.
Oh, we're not going there. So I guess what are the expectations for point guard Abby Gonzalez this season?
I mean, any way up in the numbers is definitely the right direction, but
it'd be hard to go down.
Yeah, and like they talked about last year, there wasn't really much usage from both of them, with Erica Brown kind of doing her job. And we kind of saw last year, the second game they played against Elon, Tina Martin constantly rotated Gonzalez and Cargo in, but didn't even touch the ball. It was Erica Brown until like the last few shots. So they'll have their own time to play.
I think this is going to be good for her, because she knows, as far as she's concerned, that for the next 30, 40 games, this is her team. And or not necessarily her team, but this is her job. She's the point guard of this team, and it's very clear cut. It was a lot of unclear questions last year of, you know, what the lineups are, how she's going to play, how many minutes. She knows her role. She knows what she's got to do. All she has to do now is just do it and go out every game. I think that all this clarity is just going to set up a lane and opportunity for her to succeed. And, you know, and then if she doesn't, we'll have to reassess there. But her work is cut out for her. She knows what to do now.
And last year, I think if they had other options, she would have played a lot less. She was just not very efficient, but they didn't have anybody else, so she had to play 30 minutes a game, or 28.5 to be exact. This year, they're going to need a lot more from her. They're going to need her to score a little bit, 4.4 points per game last year. I'm not super concerned about her racking up big assist numbers. I think the biggest thing is being a more efficient scorer and then playing heady defense at the other side, because Erica Brown was also a good defender in addition to being able to get to the rim. And Abby Gonzalez will have to fill some of that role. I think it will come by committee. I don't think there's going to be a single player that fills the 13 or 14 points a game that Erica Brown put up and that get to the basket ability on demand. But Abby Gonzalez is probably the first player that has to take a portion of that role. All the excitement of Delaware athletics all year long. This is WVUD Sports.
Pass it, and Enobosi, she kicks immediately to Cargo. Cargo knocks down the three.
The kick is up, and it is good! The hands rim it!
Wide open three for Ryan Daly. Knocks it down. Make it 19 for the freshman.
Ryan Daly has ice in his veins.
Tasman Hayes, a pump fake now. Hayes driving towards his right, throws up a floater. It's off the backboard and in. And one for Tasman.
Check the latest sports schedule at WVUD.org and follow us on Twitter at WVUD Sports.